The Rain Report is copyright 1990, 2016 Rain.
This is the RP Report. The ham of the 90s is demanding performance features from equipment manufacturers that were only dreamed about when yours truly first keyed a 2-meter transmitter back in 1978. And while HF, VHF, and UHF ham transceivers have shrunken in size, something called Intermod has grown by geometrical proportions. This can result in the presence of signals on your favorite frequency that really aren't there, but appear to be. Sound like double talk? Well, if not recognized for what it is, Intermod can mean double trouble. Just ask Howard Elifitz, K9SYA. Elifitz is a resident of Skokie, Illinois, and is a regional rep for Tektronix Incorporated, a company known for its high-quality spectrum analyzers. Now, over the next 2 weeks, we'll attempt to penetrate the murky world of Intermod with Howard Elifitz, K9SYA. Let's define what Intermod and mixes are for those who are brand new in the hobby or just don't know.
In a receiver, part of the front end after the RF amplifier has a mixer. And a mixer is used to take a high-frequency signal and move it down to a lower frequency. But in the process, there are many products generated. The four major products are the signal that you're feeding in, the local oscillator, and then the sum and the difference from the local oscillator. In addition, if the receiver has strong signals coming in the front end from perhaps two strong repeaters, you can generate products called third-order intermodulation distortion products, which is two times one signal plus one, and two times the first signal minus, and they'll come out at 2 points in the band. The problem with third-order intermod is those products fall very close to the signals of interest, and so in a crowded, for example, 2-meter band, those third-order products could fall on inputs or outputs of adjacent repeaters.
All right. Well, of course, it's not just repeaters anymore. We see some problems with packet interfering with repeaters.
That's right. It probably is being caused by not the nature of packet itself. It's really being generated because the packet transmitter is strong and it's probably mixing with another signal to come in on the repeater. So if you had a signal that did not have packet on it, packet by itself doesn't make a third-order intermod. It takes multiple signals to do that.
Can you break down the third-order intermod into literally what happens as far as when the signal hits your antenna and goes into the radio, then what happens?
It depends on the type of receiver, but in general, the super heterodyne, which is the general class that's used today, you have an input, you have tuned circuits, and they go into an RF amplifier. The output of the RF amplifier goes into a mixer. Well, all mixers have specifications, and the specification is that the spurious products, such as third order, are so far down from the signal coming in. Now, in the Motorola radios, like the MiCor, the spec is 90 dB. And what that means is if you have two equal amplitude signal, those spurious would be 90 dB down from those two equal amplitude signals. But most amateur receivers today only have a 60 dB spec, 30 dB less than the higher performance Motorola commercial receivers. And so it doesn't take much with high gain antennas and the ERP of the repeaters to cross that threshold and start generating these signals that are real in the sense that your receiver is generating them, but they are not being generated from the source that is the repeater transmitter.
Of course, probably the most notorious example of what you're talking about is people using HTs on gain antennas, and you have all kinds of mix and intermod problems.
That's right. Most what's known as base station radios are larger than a talkie. And as a result, there's room to put in cavities to reject out-of-band signals. And I mean commercial as well as other adjacent channels.
What is a cavity?
a cavity is a tuned bandpass that rejects signals out of a certain range. And so, for example, you may have a cavity or bandpass filter that has a 2 megahertz window. That means within 2 megahertz, the input signal is not rejected. But when you get up beyond the 2 megahertz, the rejection to that signal becomes greater and greater, and the ultimate rejection of some cavities, such as the ones used in duplexers, are well over 100 dB.
So if you have a duplexer, which consists of several cavities for the transmit signal to go through and several for the receive signal to come back through, that shouldn't have a problem eliminating any kind of mixes outside the amateur band. But the problems we're talking about are within the bandpass of those cavities. Is that right?
That's right. For example, the duplexer is tuned to your transmitter and receiver frequencies, the different cavity sections. But if you have third order generated and it's not within the radio, it could fall right on your input and the radio would just pick it up. So having the cavity would be of no benefit at all.
Now, this is more of a problem, understandably, in your urban areas more than small towns or your more country areas. But I suppose today it's getting more and more difficult to get away from it no matter where you live.
That's correct, but it's primarily an urban problem. And it's not only due to amateur communications. The commercial people have the same problems because they might have 50 antennas all on different frequencies on one building. And they have to use special equipment called circulators to try to isolate the energy so the transmitter doesn't mix and generate signals, which it can do as well as the receiver.
You're in the middle of an RP Report interview with Howard Elevitz, K9SYA, a resident of Skokie, Illinois, and a regional rep with Tektronix Incorporated, a company known for its high-quality spectrum analyzers. We'll delve more into the murky world of Intermod after a 10-second break for station ID. This is RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
How do you define a circulator?
I would say the best way to define it, it's made out of ferrite, and it's a one-way window. That is, from the transmitter to the antenna, there's some loss, but it's virtually 100% of the power will get through. But if any power tries to come back in the opposite way, from another transmitter, or if the antenna were to fail so that you have a high SWR, so a lot of power coming back, then the power coming back toward the transmitter is funneled into a termination so that the transmitter never sees the power coming back.
What is that termination?
The termination would be a 50 ohm load.
So it's like a resistor, basically, that heats up depending on how much juice is coming back
down. It's no different than a termination that you would use on any amateur transmitter, except it's precision and it's shielded, so there would be no leakage.
Could you call it technically a dummy load?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, there's one example I recall in the Chicago area. You talk about problems of RF coming back down the feed line. There was a 440 repeater that I know you're familiar with. And I understand when it went up, and it went up on a 45-46 story building a few years back, if you put a watt meter in line with the antenna, you could literally measure on the watt meter the RF that was coming down the antenna, even though the repeater wasn't even hooked up to it.
That is correct, and that is why most commercial sites require at least 2 circulators. Each circulator gives you about 25 dB rejection of incoming signals. And the reason you need to do that is if those signals that you were just describing get it back into the transmitter, they can mix in the final output of the transmitter just like they can in a receiver and generate third order intermod within the transmitter. The circulators are put in to prevent that.
So you not only have problems with third order intermod being generated in the receiver, they actually are actually created in the transmitter. And if you're running, let's say, 200 or 300 watt repeater, you got big time problems somewhere in the band.
Well, actually, it doesn't even take that. If you're generating energy due to power coming back down your line, it doesn't matter how much power you're running. It doesn't take very much of a signal at the height of the repeaters to get into other people's receivers.
Are circulators practical from a financial point of view for repeaters?
If they want to share sites with commercial users or other repeaters, the question becomes a moral question. You really need them to prevent your system from generating signals within the band.
So if a repeater does not have a circulator, it really can be part of the problem, and it's not going to be part of the solution unless it gets one.
If the repeater is sharing the site with other repeaters.
What kind of cost are we talking about, realistically, for a repeater to buy
one? It depends on the power of the circulator, but you could be up to $1,000.
So you say it might cost $1,000 for two of them for one repeater. Well, you could just buy one, and that would help, wouldn't it?
Normally, you require two to three. Because 25 dB rejection is not enough when you're sharing a site with many repeaters.
But if you can't afford two or three, one is better than none.
One is better than none. You may still be required to have two. If you're sharing a site, for example, Motorola owns the roof rights in a lot of buildings in Chicago. They require the commercial users to have three circulators or they won't even let you in the building.
Isn't one solution, Howard, that manufacturers ought to build better radios for us?
No, it's a fact of life that when you have a high level of signal, it will always stand the chance of being picked up on a transmitting antenna and brought back into the transmitter. There's things you can do to help, but the way things are today, the circulator is the solution for that problem.
This has been the RP Report, Volume 4, Number 27, Part 1 of The Murky World of Intermod, an interview with Howard Elevitz, K9SYA, a Skokie, Illinois resident and regional rep with Tektronics Incorporated, a company known for its high-quality spectrum analyzers. We'll delve more into the murky world of Intermod next time. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago, for the RP Report, a production of RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.
The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2016 RAIN. All rights reserved. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com, at The Rain Report on Twitter, and on iTunes.